Right, hello and welcome to episode 13 of the Reptor Chat podcast. Unlucky for some, but hopefully not for me. This episode is sponsored by a good friend of mine, Luke. You may or may not know Luke through Instagram as Beyond Breeders, or his TikTok is Beyond Repy as well. Luke has built Beyond Breeders from zero after his account got deactivated on Instagram. Unfortunately, this week, his new account that he got to like 10,000 followers has been deleted again because someone was stealing his content online, and he reported it to Instagram, and Instagram instead deleted his account. So he's building from the ground up again. His new account, you may have seen it popping around on Instagram today, is XPythons. So if you go give him a follow, his account info will be in the show notes below after the episode, and just let him know that Ben sent you. That would be super handy. So yeah, thanks to Luke for sponsoring today's episode. Moving on, what's going on with me? Well, first thing is I haven't got paper notes today. I've got notes on my computer, so I might be looking in a different place if you're watching. I'm trying to get out using the notes at all, but for now they're staying. Last episode, it was a pre-recorded episode because I was at the ARC show, the amphibian and reptile. What was it? Amphibian and reptile. Convention, that's the word I was looking for, hosted by MJ's Python. I got to meet loads of you lovely listeners, which was really cool. Lots of people that just follow me on Instagram as well, but it was really nice to say hello to everyone. I thought the show was brilliant, really well organized. Only thing I would say is I'd like to see a little bit more variation because it was 90% royals, but you know, I love a royal, and to be honest, that's expected with most reptile shows nowadays. It's most royals, but yeah, brilliant show. 9 out of 10. Would definitely go again, and I think they're in the works for doing one in the winter this year, but that's not confirmed yet, so don't hold me to that. What's going on in the breeding world for me? Clutch number one has hatched. They pipped actually last, I think that when the last episode aired, but like I said, that was a pre-recorded episode. So they've now all had their first sheds, and they will be getting fed very soon. I'm slowly posting the photos on Instagram as well over the next few days, so go and check my Instagram out if you want to see that. The pairing was Butterfire Hep-Pied male to an Entry-less pinstripe female. The idea of the pairing for me was just to try and hit a blue-eyed Lucy. As a blue-eyed Lucy is something that, although they're super simple, is something I've never produced myself. I've never tried, but they were like the holy grail of snakes for me way back when I first started keeping in like 2008, 2009. I did manage to hit two. I was hoping for a female, but unfortunately they were both boys, so they won't be staying. Funnily enough, though, I had 6 eggs. All 6 went and hatched. I hit 2 bells, they were boys, and the other 4 were all females, but none of them were bells. So it is how it goes. I'm well happy I hit a blue-eyed Lucy or two, and I'll look at them for a few weeks or months until they find their new permanent home, and then I will try again next year. So I'm pretty happy. But yeah, go and check me out on Instagram if you want to see that. It will also be on Morph Market in a few weeks once they've had a few feeds of them. Next clutch is due to hatch next week as well. There's another clutch I'm really excited about. The pairing of the pastel orange dream Enchi to a pastel calico. I don't like to blow my own trumpet very often, but my pastel calico is genuinely probably the best example of a pastel calico I've personally seen. There may well be others out there, but I was looking for like 18 months to find that girl. So I'm really excited to see what comes out. I've got 5 eggs, and hopefully we'll hit some really cool calico combos. I'm really hoping to hit like a super pastel Enchi calico. I'm not fussed about the OD, but we'll wait and see. To be fair, as long as I just get calicos, I'll be well happy. Right, that's enough. Moving on, as my guest is patiently sat waiting for me to stop talking about myself. Today's guest is a fellow podcaster, a leopard gecko breeder and keeper, and he also owns the world's largest leopard gecko. So let's get him in. Please welcome George from Elite Geckos.
Hello, Ben.
How are you, mate? All right.
I'm good, thank you. Yourself?
I'm very good, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. It's massively appreciated.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
No worries. So, if you haven't listened before, I like to get this podcast started with a section I like to call the Get to Know section. It's basically a few quick fire questions, So if you could just give a short, snappy answers, it sort of breaks the ice a little bit, and then we'll get deep into the pod. All right?
Brilliant.
So, first exotic pet?
Yeoman chameleon.
Nice. Most recent addition to the collection?
Most recent addition to the collection was probably the super giant.
Nice. Favourite non-leopard gecko species?
Mexican alligator, lizard, Arbornia.
Cool. Yeah. Money, space, time, legalities, no issue. What is a species that you'd love to add to the collection?
Maybe monkey skinks.
Oh, cool. I really like monkey skinks. Someone I follow on Instagram has got some, and they're really cool. And most importantly, what's your favourite biscuit?
Oh, it has to be a custard cream.
Oh, nice. We haven't had a custard creamer yet. I like a custard cream. good choice. Cool. So that's those questions done. Then we move on to something I like to call this or that. It's exactly how it sounds. I'm going to say a couple of things, and you just off the top of your head. All right. So, beach or mountains?
Beach.
Sun or snow?
Sun.
Vacation or staycation?
Vacation.
Night in, night out?
Night in.
Nice. And early bird, night out, or permanently exhausted pigeon?
Early bird for me.
Nice. We've had a few early birds on recently. I like to try and I think of myself as an early bird, although I feel like a permanently exhausted pigeon this week. Awesome. So we've got the icebreakers out of the way. So let's deep dive into it, I guess. So, George, could you give me and the listeners a history lesson on George and elite geckos? How did you get into reptile keeping? What was your first reptile experience, and how has your collection grown over the years?
Okay. So we've always been that family. I've had cats, dogs. We've had parrots, selection of fishes, marine fish, tropical fish, you know, your rabbits, your hams, all that stuff. So we've always been a family that have liked to have pets. And it was actually my sister one day said, I would like a chameleon. And my parents travel went, no, every time you guys get a pet, you don't really look after it. I end up cleaning it. No. And it sort of stuck in my head. I remember doing some research about human chameleons. And I was like, I really like the look of that. And she sort of planted the seed in my head. Anyway, one day I went out to my parents and I would really like a Yeoman chameleon. And they said, well, if you want one, you could have one because of everything you've had, you look after. So if you want one, you could have one. So this was in 2015. So I went out, found a breeder, got a Yeoman chameleon, absolutely loved it. Ended up getting a female as well. Because with me as a person, everything I get into animal wise, I really like the reproduction side. I always think about, it'd be nice to hatch something like that or with a fish. It'd be nice to have some of those fish. So I was always in the back of my head thinking in the future I could breed this. So I ended up getting a female. She gave me 80 eggs. I ended up freezing 50% of them. So I remember being like, I ain't going to be able to look after
80 eggs is a lot of eggs. That's
yeah. Even with the 40 I hatched, they eat so much and it was crazy. So I started breeding those. Had babies, sold babies, etc. And it was actually my missus that came up to me one day and was like, I love the chameleons. The only thing I don't like about them is I want something I can hold. I want something I can interact with chameleons. They are very much looky, no touchy. You do get lucky.
I've got one behind me and he is an arse. He's horrible. But like you say, he's really cool to look at.
Brilliant, brilliant pets. But you can't interact so much. Panthers, you can get them out a lot more, but with the Yeemans, they are very much looky, no touchy. And she was like, I'm going to have a look for a reptile that I can hold kind of thing. And I said, whatever you get, please don't get a beardy because it's a big viv and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, she came up to me and was like, I've done some research. Leopard gecko is really easy to look after. And I love leopard print. So let's get a leopard gecko. And I remember being like, can't we get something that not everybody has?
Yeah.
Can we get something a bit different? Maybe a cave gecko or something? No, leopard gecko. So I ended up getting my first leopard gecko. That was early 2016. That was in Global Geckos. I got my very first gecko.
Yeah, they're not that far away from me, actually. It's a fantastic shop, Global Geckos.
Brilliant shop. So we ended up getting my first gecko and brought it back. I fell in love with it. This animal, I thought, boring. I loved it. So ended up going to a shop. Not me thinking. They were like, oh, you can get a female, put it in with the male, no problem. So I did that, had eggs, done some research, got an incubator, and then hatched my first leopard gecko. That was late 2016. I hatched my first leopard gecko.
So it's quite a quick turnaround then.
Yeah. I mean, I've never kept reptiles since. So ever since I've sort of kept reptiles, I've always been breeding the whole time I've been doing it, even though that's probably not the best way to do it when I think about it now. But the whole time I've kept reptiles, I've bred reptiles.
Yeah.
And then from hatching that first baby leopard gecko, the itch got me. And I started looking, researching, because in my opinion, I think leopard gecko morphs and genes work very similar to ball pythons, but I just couldn't get to grips with it for the first year. It took me about 2 years to first get to grips with it, and then it just sort of all took off from there, to be honest with you. Just got the itch, doing more research. I'd say personally, when I got to a good level with leopard geckos, I'd say it was probably 2019 2020, especially okay. when Because I run Rapid Reptiles Courier,
yeah.
So I was getting to see everybody's collections before everybody else, and I think that's what really got me glued into what I do now.
Yeah, you have to be honest. I don't know much about leopard geckos. I've got leopard geckos here. I don't know anything about the morphs. They confuse me so much. Which, as a royal breed, I thought, like, I looked into it quite a lot, and I was like, it can't be that difficult. I have no idea what I'm looking at when it comes to leopard geckos at all. But from what I can see on your Instagram, just scrolling through the pictures, you have got some awesome stuff in your collection at the moment. And it looks like it's only going to progress forward massively and quite quickly by the looks of what you're posting as well. Like I said, I'm not sure exactly what I'm looking at, but I can tell that they're really nice.
I appreciate that.
So how many leopard geckos are not like hatchlings for sale, but say like adults and holdbacks are you keeping in your collection at the moment, roughly?
I'd say I'm probably keeping around about 150.
Right, okay, that's quite a lot. But
yeah, it's quite.
I don't know how manageable that is. All I've got three, so, and then I've got royals, and royals is really straightforward to keep. So, are they a lot of work, like day to day? What's the sort of process behind how much time are you dedicating to it? I suppose
I'm pretty much, because I have a family. So basically, my reptile room is at my parents. So yeah. They bought a big house. All of us moved into it. And then my sister went to uni. My older sister moved out. I moved out. And they're like, right, we've got this big house with all these rooms. So they actually offered me a room. Said, look, you can have a room here. You know, pay some rent, pay some electric. That's your room kind of thing. So I've been quite fortunate. Sorry, what was the question?
So what's your day-to-day maintenance, sort of, if it is day-to-day or say weekly?
Sorry, Pat.
That's all right.
Self-employed with my dad, so I have to go to my parents' house every single morning and every single evening. So every day I'm in there, I'm always doing spot cleaning. I'll say I'm probably in my reptile room 2.5 hours a day, and then I've got Saturday I'll be there from, let's say, 9 o'clock in the morning all the way over to about 3. So I'm in there quite a lot. I think a lot of people don't give our reptiles enough credit with over cleaning, that makes sense. Because with leopard geckos,
I don't think they can be over clean, but I know what you mean.
Do you know, like, I'm with leopard geckos, they scent themselves a lot. So a lot of the time, when I say deep clean, I mean like you're spraying it down every day, wiping it out and stuff. It's not that great for leopard geckos because you put the male in there, stresses him out, he's got to re-scent himself. So you haven't got to clean them tons and tons. I know with like royals, you do a lot of like spot cleaning. So if the snake goes for a number two, you can pick out the corner and throw it away. But to be honest with you, it's a lot of work. It's 150 geckos is a lot. And then you've got hatchlings on top of that. Hatchlings are worse. You've got to clean them out twice a week, three times a week. You can imagine.
Yeah. No, I've had quite experience with hatching leopard geckos. I never hatched myself. A friend of mine, when I was like 15, 16, used to breed leopard geckos. And all I remember from his hatchlings were the hatchlings are vicious. Like they hiss, they scratch you. Like they're really quite entertaining to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I always thought, is that because of the animal kingdom, they haven't got much defense apart from dropping tails. That's why I always think they come out so angry, like they got nothing else. I know teeth to show, but they can be buggers when they're hatchlings.
So 150 plus leopard geckos is obviously, like we said, it's quite a few leopard geckos. How are you keeping them? Have you got like racks, or are they all in vivariums? How does it work for leopard geckos?
So I have everything in a racking system. I keep adults in about 30 litre tubs. I keep super giants and adults the exact same. Adults are in 30 litres. Then you go into like your sub-adult sort of growing out sort of 11 litres. And then I keep my babies at about 3 litres. So we're lucky with leopard geckos where we can keep such a lot in a small amount of space.
Yeah. And do you keep them individually or do you keep them in like trios or males together or females together? I don't know. What's the process? What's how you keep them?
I keep everything singular. You get better success. You get no aggression. I know there's many breeds, especially in the USA, they will keep groups. So sometimes they'll have 5 females and a male in that one singular tub. But for me, you get better growth and there's because they're with leopard geckos, they can get egg bound very, very quickly. So anything like stress and that can cause that. So to reduce that, I have everything singular. And also, leopard geckos are so prone to parasites due to their food, the crickets and stuff like that. So if you get one female that's ingested something, it could spread to your whole lot. I just think it's so much easier to keep everything singular. On the occasion, I might leave a male in for breeding, but generally everyone's got their own home.
Yeah, no, when I first started keeping reptiles, I think I had 4 leopard geckos. And like you say, I would, like the only information at the time, this was like 2007, 2008-ish.
Yeah.
So all I had was like snake bites TV, really, and then the odd care sheet that they weren't very helpful. So I was keeping, I think I had 3 girls and a boy all together in a 4 foot by 2 foot by 2 foot viv.
Yeah.
And they were fine for like 18 months. And I bought them all as adults and they all came from different places. And quarantine wasn't as much of a thing then, so it probably wasn't the best. But they were all together in a 4 foot viv. They were fine for 18 months. Then all of a sudden, one of the females just decided she hated everything. And this female I took the male out because I was like, oh, maybe it's because he's in there. Nope, I go in the evenings and she'd be latched onto other females, chasing them around. I was like, maybe she's a boy. Nope, definitely female, just horrible. So after that, we've got 3 at the moment, but they're all separate and they'll stay separate forever. And again, like you said, the parasites, unfortunately, my daughter had a leopard gecko. I think it was last year, might have been the year before. What, COVID year, so whatever that year was. It all blurs into one. He got, we only had him for like 3 months and luckily we had quarantined him, but he got what I diagnosed as stick tail.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, he went from being a like gorgeous example of his leopard gecko to being a skeleton in almost like 3 weeks. It was ridiculous. Unfortunately, we did take him to the vets, but unfortunately he had to be put to sleep. But I'm glad that they were separated from the other ones because something like that, like it hit him so quickly. I can only imagine it would be like a tidal wave going through the other ones.
Yeah.
So I think keeping them separate is definitely the way to go.
Definitely. And that, what you explained right there, that's one of, like as a leopard gecko breeder and keeper, that is one of the main worries if someone's had something. Like for us as a breeder, if someone's, you know, they might, because people do cohabit. I'm not totally against it. If it works for you, it works for you. I'm that sort of person. So it's always a bit of a worry just in case we brought something like that into my collection. And, you know, even if you're quarantining, it could still, something like a tongue, or you take the paper towel out and the germs are on your hand.
Yeah.
And you go, it's so easily and it spreads like wildfire. But yeah, as you witness this, it can be pretty horrible.
Oh yeah, it was really bad. I felt really bad for her as well because she'd saved up and bought him with her own money and I think we must have had him. It wasn't very long, 3-4 months if that.
Yeah,
and he went downhill so quickly. Luckily, I have bred leopard geckos once in the past, and this was a long time ago. I sold a baby to a friend of mine, a female, probably again 2007-ish sort of time, and he phoned me about 4 or 5 years ago now and said, I've still got that leopard gecko. Do you want her back? So we've got a leopard gecko upstairs that is, I don't know, she must be like 18, 19 years old. And she's one of the first reptiles I ever produced. And it was nice, although he didn't want to look after her anymore, which is a bit of a shame. It was really nice to have that like full circle and her to come back to us again. So she's sort of, it's nice.
Definitely, that's pretty cool. I've had a few things like that come up before. Someone's been like, I bought this gecko off you in 2017, would you like it back? And it's like, I've lost that father, so it'd be amazing to have that back. So it is really nice seeing stuff like that. But you surprised me because of 19, 20 years, that you've been in the scene a long time.
I had, there was a big break in the middle. So I started keeping when I was like 12 years old. So I don't know when that was, 2005-ish. So from 2005 to like 12 years old to like 17, 18. So 2008, 2009, did all the don't do the reptile thing. So I bought a leopard gecko, and then all of a sudden I had a bedroom full of vivs that probably weren't the right size, with like rainbow boas and normal boa constrictors and berms and God knows what. And then I moved out. I was driving. There was girlfriends and stuff, and everything got sold. and then I got back into it. 2000. I'm rubbish with years. Like 2019, maybe 18, 19. So, like, this is my fifth season breeding again since keeping. So, although it sounds like a long time, there was a big chunk in the middle where I was sort of trying to keep up to date, but I wasn't really involved in it. So I'm trying to like relearn stuff as well, which is quite nice for the podcast because I'm sort of approaching each episode as not quite a newbie, but I can understand where a person was interested but hasn't kept before. I can understand where they're coming from because everything's changed so much. Like my first leopard gecko was in a viv with calcium sand and a red light bulb. And like, we don't do that anymore. Everything I've just said is awful. So talking of calcium sand, how do you keep your geckos in the tubs? Obviously not on calcium sand, but are you nice and clean with like paper towel, or are they a bit more naturalistic with like eco earth, or what sort of setups are they in the tubs?
So I personally keep everything as sterile as I possibly can. So I'll use kitchen roll for the substrate. I'd have a moist box with eco earth in it that will help aid shedding and also let the females lay their eggs. I'll have two caves, your bowl, your water bowl, and your calcium bowl. And some of them I have jazzed it up a little bit. I put some like fake foliage in there just to, you know, it's just a little bit nicer. Like I always recommend to people, if you can go just that little bit better, adding a little bit of extra, maybe a bit of cork bark, something like that, always do it.
Yeah. And have your racks, because I've seen some of them online recently, you can get leopard gecko racks now that have like a UV light involved, like in, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but they've got UV in for each tub as well. Is that something yours have got, or do you not?
No, I keep everything cool. It's very similar to ball pythons, actually. We have the heat map, the thermostat, but there is definitely, the hobby's changing, it always evolves. I've seen the racks with the UV light, and you can have cresties in it, leopard geckos and stuff like that, so it's definitely evolving. But me personally, I like to keep it as everything as clean as possible, especially with leopard geckos.
Clean and simple as well. I find if it's not necessarily like empty, but the simpler the setup is, the easier it is to spot if there's an issue as well. So like if you've got like a full bioactive and I don't know, the leopard gecko hasn't done a poo for 6 weeks, you're probably not going to notice it. Whereas if you're on paper towel and you're clean, like going in every day, water changing, whatever, you'll notice that a lot quicker. So then if there are issues, they can get solved quicker as well. Not that I'm saying bioactive isn't good. I really like bioactive, and I've got a leopard gecko on bioactive setup. But I think on a scale that you're doing, it's definitely the way to go.
100%. I had a debate with somebody. I remember having a general conversation with somebody on a WhatsApp group, and they had changed all of their racking systems into bioactive. So it was the exact same as mine, except when they had like eco earth in it mixed with soil and sand, and sort of try and make it as naturalistic as possible. And this was a breeder, and I thought, with me personally, like you just said, if a gecko goes to the toilet, let's say with early signs of like stick tail / crypto, is they have really green stools and it's very, very smelly. So when you've got a big tub full of eco earth and they have a stool, you can't, it gets sunken into the soil or the soil will absorb it. You can never ever sort of see it, sort of kind of thing. I was having a sort of conversation about how they clean. They said they clean every week, and I thought it's just not sort of cost effective in a way where if you use a roll of Blitz or like a kitchen roll for £2-3 and then buying a bag of sort of like soil for £15 but changing oil, like with me, that cost me hundreds and hundreds every week. And we're sort of having a bit of a debate about it, because my debate is you're supposed to clean thoroughly every month. Are you sure you're doing that with the soil kind of thing? But yeah, I totally agree with how we keep things and how many we produce. You want to make sure you can see everything.
Yeah,
there's
definitely
anything gone wrong, or you know, we can see a lot from their stalls. Same with food, like with the parasite things with leopard geckos. A lot of the time, what it is the mealworm will come out of the bowl. It will start eating on the gecko's poo. Then the gecko will eat that mealworm, and it's constantly infesting itself, because every leopard gecko has parasites. It's in their diet. They're just, their body can tolerate it. It's just when the numbers go a little bit too high, they're like, well, then they start to struggle. Because most
insects, they are quite small. They turn pretty quickly as well, don't they?
Super quickly. I mean, I've seen it happen before myself, and it's almost like you look at it and it's like there's no going back. Like you took it to the vet, you know, put it out of its misery because of it. It's just, the best way to explain it is, it's like AIDS in humans.
Yeah.
Never curable. You might be able to prolong their life or give them treatments that will make them live a little bit longer, but it's eventually going to get them.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those unfortunate things. I'm quite lucky, touch wood, that the royals are pretty hardy. The only thing they really suffer with is like a respiratory infection or a nidovirus. So the respiratory infections, 99% of the time, is something like a husbandry issue. So as long as you're keeping them like how they should be kept, that's going to be fine. Nido virus in royals is a bit like what I think crypto is in leopard geckos, in the sense that it's a virus. It can hit quickly. It can fly through your whole collection. And you just have to be super careful. So I quarantine snakes for like at least 3 months before they move in, like before I do anything. They have their own tongs. Don't get anywhere near the rest of them. Again, just in case. And I only buy from like reputable breeders as well. And like you say, bringing stuff into your collection, especially if you've got such a large quantity of animals at home already, the last thing you want to be doing is going, oh, I know this person, I'm pretty sure they're reputable or whatever. Unfortunately, they haven't noticed. And then you bring in some god-awful virus and wipe out half your collection in the space of a month. Because let's face it, it could, in theory, happen.
100%. Totally agree. Yeah.
So, it's not nice. But back onto the sort of how you're setting them up. So, obviously, you're keeping it on a massive scale.
Yeah.
For people that are listening that possibly they've got one or they're thinking about getting a leopard gecko, would you say to them still, go for like a rub setup or like a tub setup, really basic? Or would you say, like, do your quarantine and then possibly go into a more bioactive if you're only planning on keeping one? Because I know it's a massive difference from being like a pet keeper of one animal to being like, I know you're a breeder, but I imagine you're much the same as I am, where although you are a breeder, you see them as pets as well.
Oh, 100%.
But there's a difference between having like one or two animals to having 10, 15, 100, 150. So, yeah, I suppose the question is, if someone's listening that it's got one or two or they want to get into one, how would you recommend they were to keep it?
I'd always say if you could put all your animals in vivariums the correct way, with a singular and stuff like that, vivarium's always the way to go, personally. Especially if you're going to get a pet. You can't go no better than having, you know, the correct lighting, you know, the substrate, you know, have it all looking naturalistic. It's better for the animal that they can show more natural instinct, especially with feeding. I'd always say go for vivariums 100%. If you're worried about the whole with the parasites, and I'd say if you personally, this would be the ideal way. If you bring your first gecko home, don't put anything in your vivarium. Keep it as sterile as you can. Have your gecko in there 2 to 3 months, keep an eye on the stall, and once everything's good, you can take it all out and then go bio. That's the absolute best way to do it. But so, I would say vivariums.
Yeah, and what I would say as well is, like, hides and stuff, if on your quarantine, use, like, homemade hides. Use, like, old margarine tubs or toilet roll tubes, because they're easily, like, you can easily throw them away. They're easy to get new ones. You don't want to get, like, spend all your money on fancy Exoterra whatever's, and then maybe you get an issue with, I don't know, some sort of parasite or something, and then you have to go through the like replacing them, because really you can clean them to an extent, but it's easier just to go out and buy new stuff, isn't it? So just as another safety thing is to try and keep it where you can just dispose of whatever's in there and put new stuff in each time you clean them out, I think would be another beneficial thing to mention.
Definitely. I mean, I use fish and chip shop trays.
Yeah, yeah. What a good idea.
Yeah, okay. I eat a lot of fish and chips. I cut them in half, and they're brilliant, like you just said, especially with keeping the amount we have. And generally, majority of my animals go to other breeders. But obviously, I do get the pet home and stuff like that. But for us, it's, you can just grab it straight in the bin, cut another one. I think they work out, if you buy them in bulk, they work out like pennies each.
Yeah.
And it saves time, and you know it's 100% sterile.
No, that's brilliant. And if you get peckish, you've got something you can take your chips with you.
Exactly.
So actually, I wanted to just double back on something you said earlier. So you said it was your wife that was initially interested in getting the leopard gecko. So is it a family thing with the elite geckos, or is it just a project that you're working on yourself, or is it something you all get involved in together?
It is just a me thing. She says I completely take over. I have tried to get her in. She loves it. Everything I show her, she thinks is beautiful, but she's not into it like how we are. Yeah. I've tried. I had a group of Cresties. I thought she's gonna love Cresties. Well, girls don't love
Cresties. Who doesn't love a
Cresties? Yeah, I thought she's gonna love it. You know, it eats fruit. It eats bugs. She can feed the fruit. I'll feed the bugs. Got a group of Cresties. She just stood there, went nice, and then she's just not into it like us. But she does appreciate good animals. So if I pop over to my parents, she comes and I show her something I've had. She goes, "Oh, that's really, really nice." But yeah, Generally, it's just an all me thing. I mean, she does help out. Don't get me wrong. She'll come upstairs and she'll, you know, snap the kitchen roll for me and give it to me. But other than that, she leads me to it, which I think is probably quite good, because I can imagine if she was into it like me, we would have no money. Sitting down watching.
You need someone there being like the good angel or the bad angel.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine both sitting there on Morph Market, just seeing your money go.
Yeah. Oh, have you seen this? Oh, that's nice. Let's get it. Yeah, we don't need to eat this week.
That's really nice. I'd say it's probably better that way. And if she knew what I spent on my geckos and how to keep them, and I think I'll get killed as well. So especially stays out of it.
No, I agree with that as well. Yeah, definitely. So we covered the sort of housing aspect of it. But for those people that are listening that have maybe got one or two or three or four leopard geckos and they want to start breeding, what's sort of your process of breeding? Is there a season? What are the sort of do's and don'ts? What would you say to people? So someone said to you, "Oh, I've got a few. I really want to get into breeding. I've done some research." What would you say to them? Like, this is how I do it, et cetera, et cetera.
I get this message. We've been obviously doing podcasts. Like, you do get these genuine questions pop up a lot. I'd always say to the people first, do you know the backgrounds of the geckos? That's it. Because with leopard geckos, it's different with royals. Like, if you hatch a hidden het, it's like a get in.
Yeah.
That's an extra gene in that. But with leopard geckos, finding a hidden het could destroy someone's project.
Right. It's funny you should say that. I'll just jump in for a second and let you carry on. Sorry.
No.
I was talking to someone on Instagram a couple of years ago. I can't remember what his name was. I don't know. I can't remember. Something geckos, and he lived near a centre box. I can't remember anything else, but that's all. I think maybe GW or something. And I was talking to him about breeding, what I'm wanting to breed ours, because my daughter was asking. So obviously we breed the royals, and she's like, "Oh, can we do this?" And he was like, "Unless you know exactly what the history of the gecko is and what the genes are, it's really frowned upon in the leopard gecko breeding world," which was something that I hadn't even thought of, because like you say, in royals, if you do a pairing and you get something unexpected hatch out, that's generally really exciting.
Yeah.
And I was under the impression it'd be the same in leopard geckos. And I was actually talking to a friend last week, and he has just hatched some leopard geckos. Same sort of thing. He paired them because his son wanted to breed them and they had some. So they're like, "We'll do it." They didn't plan on selling them. They were going to keep or give them like to friends. And he posted them on his Instagram, and he got a shitty message from someone because he'd paired two albinos together. And we were both under the impression that was fine, because it's something you would do in the royal world. But obviously it's not. So carry on where you were. So yeah, yeah, go on.
Obviously with Raws, you get hair. It's a fantastic. It's a bonus for me. It's a free gene basically. Yeah. But with leopard geckos, it's really really frowned upon because of we have three albinos. So you can't tell the difference between the three. And if you pair them together, you'll just hatch normals. So someone could have a rainwater project. So there's three albinos. You've got the Tremper albino, you've got the Bell albino, and you've got the rainwater albino. So if someone came to you and there's a certain tangerine you got, and they've asked for like a het rainwater in it, and they pair it to their big rainwater project that they've been working on for the last 10 years, and they're producing geckos, and then they sell them out and they produce an albino that shouldn't be in there, it's a huge problem. They become...
Are all three albino strains, are they all compatible? So in theory, if you were to pack like a Tremper to a rainwater, would you still produce an albino?
You wouldn't produce an albino. The two albinos have to be the same. So if you've got a Tremper and a Tremper, that'll make the Tremper. But Tremper to rainwater, you'll just produce essentially a het Tremper and a het rainwater.
Right.
That would go down and basically will be a pet only animal. So it's same with like you said earlier. I have nothing against anybody who gets into this and like, right, I want to breed some leopard geckos, but I just want to breed them for pets, family and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think people are quite harsh on that in the leopard gecko world, where they're like, no, you should know your genetics. You should know. If they wanted to be a breeder, I totally agree. And they want to sell.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Product. But if you're just... Let's say you're just a kid, you've got two leopard geckos you got from the pet shop, they're thriving, they're doing well, you're only going to sell to your pets, and you're only going to sell to your friends and stuff like that, go for it. Because if things like that get the spark, and that's what got me the spark.
Yeah, definitely.
I done it the wrong way, but it brought that, you know, I didn't realise what this hobby was going to be like this. Until I joined Facebook, started posting my hatchlings, and people started popping up. I was like, wow, there's all these morphs, and so I think things like that you can definitely do, but just make sure that they will be a pet home, because of you could sell something like, for example, het eclipses in everything in leopard geckos, eclipses in absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So you might have a tangerine project that is het eclipse, but you bought an animal that shouldn't have the eclipse, so you shouldn't produce any eclipses.
Right.
And what eclipse does with tangerine, it can completely wipe out the colour. So someone who's got a project they might be working on for years, they're getting the tangerines to a red stage, and all of a sudden their eclipse pops. It's like, so now you've washed all that colour out, and now I just paid £2,000 for that gecko, and now I've got all these head eclipses. What else is in there?
Yeah.
And we also have enigmas in leopard geckos.
There is one morph. I can't remember what it was. I remember, like I said, way back when, there was a morph that you couldn't do the pairing, because I think it might have been Enigma or something. It gave them some sort of, like, it wasn't a disease, but it was like not beneficial for them. I can't remember off the top of my head exactly what it was. I don't know if you'll be able to, if you'll know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. That would be the Enigma. The morph itself, it causes neurological issues. So your geckos will spin. That's called star glazing. They'll look up in the sky and they start shaking. Some of them roll on their back. They struggle eating, and it's just generally hard work for the gecko. Yeah. So I know us in the UK and most of Europe and USA are sort of getting on board, where it's like, we shouldn't be producing these animals, even though they're beautiful. We shouldn't be producing these animals because of what sort of life are they having?
Okay, so it's a bit like the spider morph in bull pythons.
It's exactly the same. Yeah. And we do get a lot of breeds at the time. I don't know if it's the same with spiders, but I know we get a few breeders pop up here and there, and they'll say, "I'll have a spin-free Enigma line," and it's personally not possible, because anything like it could be a stress. Anything can trigger the Enigma syndrome. So even though you're sitting back, you're thinking, "I've got a 3-year-old Enigma here; he's never spun in his life." At some point, that gecko, we can't guarantee. At some point, it will most likely spin. Of course, you'll get one or two or a few out there that have never spun, but generally that morph will spin. And then this will go on to the lemon frost. The lemon frost is a new gene that came out, It came out, I think it was 2018, 2019, and it was a huge thing. Huge, huge lemon frost. They had bright white eyes. They had, the name was perfect, lemon frost. The skin was always like a washed out yellow. The best way to explain it is like with Game of Thrones, the White Walkers. That's what like the Lemon Frost were like. And it was huge for people paying crazy money for them. And but that morph, that gene, causes cancer. So later on down the line, we're seeing geckos with cancerous eyes and cancerous growths. And there's been scientific research on it. They're like, this gene causes the cancer. Some crystal or something within their skin causes this cancer.
Right.
So there's things like that with leopard gecko kin. We have a lot of problems with certain genes and stuff like that. And they can pop out and it causes a huge problem, which I wish it wasn't like that, because we've all fell victim for it. We've all accidentally done it. But in the leopard gecko world, your name could be destroyed for that.
Right.
It's ball python. It's like, there's some hets in leopard geckos that ain't a problem if you hatch it, like a Murphy Patternus, Eclipse, but it can ruin someone's work, because with leopard geckos, you have a lot of lion breeding stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I can't remember what the word is. It's like selective breeding. So like you pair like the reddest one to the reddest one to get a redder one. I can't remember what the word is off the top of my head. But that sort of thing. I see what you mean.
Do you have that in Royals at all?
Yes and no. It's like you can do it. There are a few people that do it. So like, say for example, a pastel, you'd save the two brightest ones from the clutch and then pair them back together, and over the years they might get slightly brighter, and there's a few people that do that and produce their own lines, but generally it doesn't tend to happen as much in Royals. It does happen quite a lot in corn snakes though. I can't remember the word of it. That's really annoying. That's going to bug me all evening now. It begins with a P, but I can't remember what it is. That's the word. Polygenic breeding or polymorph. I don't know. But that's really interesting. Like the lemon frost one. That really unfortunate. It sounds really cool. And I imagine. Some eco geckos have said polygenic in the comments. I imagine that the person that produced the lemon frost to start with was completely unaware of the issues that could arise. And then all of a sudden, all these people are buying them, and then bang, like that one's got a tumor, that one's got a tumor. That must have been not only crap for the people that have spent all this money on the geckos, but also crap for the person that was like, oh, look what I've made, it's really good. Like, I can only imagine.
Yeah, it was a bit of a, I remember it was a bit of an uproar because the guy, there's a really fantastic breed in the USA called Steve Skies. He breeds a mixture of corn snakes, king snakes, loads of stuff. He bought, I don't know whether it was the first lemon frost or a baby from the lemon frost. I think it was for 15k an auction. And he produced it in the masses, released it to loads of people. And then what should have really happened is there should have been more genetic testing with it. So I think they just hatched up, this is brilliant, there's no issues here. And loads of people were buying them, pairing them, and were getting these cancers. So there was a huge uproar. Like you said, some people were paying a lot of money. I know some people in the UK were paying thousands. Even though their gecko weren't showing no issues, it was publicly announced that this morph creates cancer.
That pretty much writes it off straight away, doesn't it? Like, straight away, if you've got it in your collection, that's it. Like, if it was like a 10 grand gecko, it's dropping to like a tenner, and that'll it. There'll be no more people producing it because it's just not worth it. So that's a lot of, for quite a lot of people, that's a big investment. For most people, that's a huge investment. And to put that sort of money in, if I was to put 10, 15 grand into a royal and then someone told me every baby you produce could potentially have a massive tumour, I'd be like, shit.
Yeah. Well, that's that then.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, going back to working all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mad. That's crazy. Like you said as well, with the enigmas, it is very similar to how you're describing it to the spider morph in royals. Like, I've kept spiders. People don't tend to not breed them. They do. People that are generally getting in the hobby in Royals will buy spider morphs because, one, they look really cool, and two, they're so much cheaper than everything else. So, like, you can go out and buy, for example, I don't know, a 4-gene animal. If it didn't have spider in, if it was a girl, I don't know, you're looking at 300-400 quid. If it's got spider in, that same animal could be like the 4 genes that are there for 300-400 quid. Plus spider, the price will half, if not more, because people just like, they know that they're not fussed. But when they get into it, they go, oh, I'll buy the spider one, we'll breed it anyway, and then we'll just hope that we don't produce loads of spiders. Like, I've done it. Like, when I got back into it, I was like, that's all right. I know what they're like. They do wobble a bit. They'll be all right. And I know that I'm not going to produce, like, I know that every baby, there's a potential that there'll be babies that haven't got spider in them.
Yeah.
And then I can get rid of the spider. But unfortunately, a lot of people do it. So there's a lot of spider around still. But it does seem that the people in the leopard gecko world are a bit, well, I say a bit, they're very strict, like you say, on what they're like, what's going on in their genetics, which I don't think is a bad thing. Which is, yeah, it's really good, to be fair. So why, back to the original question, sorry, or we went off on a bit of a tangent there. If there's someone listening that wants to breed the geckos, what's your process? So is there a season? Do you have to, like, call them? Are you introducing a male and leaving him in there? How do you go about breeding your leopard geckos?
So we're quite fortunate with leopard geckos, where with, like, snake breeding, you normally have to get them up, I think it's like 2 or 3 years. But with generally with leopard geckos, the ovulation sort of stage, I'll say, is between December, and it sort of stops off around about September. That's the general when they sort of start to produce and ovulate and stuff. But we can change that as breeders. So if we cool them down at a certain time, we can manipulate their ovulation basically when they're going to start kicking off. But with leopard geckos, I've had a 5-month, 40-gram female start ovulating, and it's like, you were born 5 months ago, you're ovulating.
Yeah, that's mad. So when they ovulate, or when they start ovulating, obviously you can see the eggs underneath them if you look underneath them, can't you?
Yes.
Would you pair them at that age, or would you just leave them? I don't know, will they lay slugs, or do they reabsorb them? Or would you let them pair it because nature has said they're ready, so why not?
Yeah. But the early elite geckos probably would, but now I always wait until they're the next season, so like a year. When you give them that size, even though there's like a hidden rule, it's like don't pair a female at any smaller than 40 grams.
Right.
But in my opinion, a 40 gram Leo is quite small.
Yeah.
Especially in 5-6 months, like you can have success and it can work. It's just from my experience, you get such a better result when you just wait that one more year. That gecko's still growing.
Yeah.
Same with, like, we'll go on to it about the supergiants. Don't pair your gecko too soon, because you will lose so much potential when that animal, its growth will be stunted. It will lose colour, a more high risk to egg binding. You might even just get slugs. The best thing to do.
Oh, I've lost you for a second there. Hang on a second. What's going on? Oh, sorry. Oh, no, we're back there. Sorry. I lost you for a second there. Yeah, we got to, wait for a year. You don't want slugs. You don't want egg binding. So there's a lot of health risks if you're pairing them too early, is what you're saying, basically.
Yeah, 100%. I agree, yeah.
And is it the same for boys? Because obviously the girls are put under a lot of stress when they're producing it, or producing follicles, ovulating, building eggs, whatever. Is it the same for boys? Because really, although they haven't got as much of a involved job, so to speak.
Yeah, I'd say the boys you can probably get away with a lot better. So again, I'd leave it at 40, 50 grams at least. 40s are still on a low side to me, but you could potentially pair a male on his first year. But again, similar to the females, he might. I've seen that there was a breeder I knew. He bought a purple head male. And he, I think it was 6-7 months old, and he was trying to pair it, and he wasn't. He was pairing, but he just wasn't getting the job done. And we think that's because he's still quite young. You know, he's only just starting to get sexually mature. Let's say he just only learned how to rattle his tail. So I say, yeah, you can. And if you want to do it and it works, I say it'll be absolutely fine. But again, I would always wait. Just that one more year. Don't rush it. Just take your time with breeding.
Yeah, like I think that's the same with most reptiles, if not all reptiles. Like they can produce earlier than you expect them to, but like you say, it's not beneficial to the animal at all. It's just a greed part on the keeper, so to speak. So when you're pairing, are you introducing your female to your male, or is your male going with your female? How long are they staying in with each other, or do you do it in like a neutral territory? What's the process there?
So generally I will get the female and I'll put the female in the male's cave or tub or where you call it. generally, I prefer to see if it's happened, because of you could potentially miss ovulation and you've missed the season, or, you know, all that sort of stuff. But I personally prefer seeing it visually. But sometimes you do get that stubborn female, or you get the male that's like, not today. And I will leave them in there, let's say, overnight. And generally, you can, over the years of producing so many geckos now, geckos are brutal when they breed.
Yeah, they are.
So brutal. Like, it worked with skinks and stuff. Like, with the breeding, they can even, like, drop their tails and stuff through this breeding. It's so brutal. So, generally, when a male has successfully paired with my female, you can see these little V marks. I call it V marks. And not like enough to break skin, but you can see that he's grabbed onto it. And generally, that means he has successfully paired, because if a female don't want a male to pair with her, she will make sure she tells him. That's one thing I say to people. If you're again, how my geckos ain't pairing. If your female is telling your male to go away, she's probably not ovulating and she's not ready.
Yeah. Like you said, they can be pretty brutal as well. Like, I remember a few times, like when you're seeing that male like biting onto the neck and holding on, you're like, oh my God, it looks really savage.
I've got a load of people on TikTok like, what are you doing? Why didn't you do that? And I'm like, no, it's just breeding behavior. You're sick.
Sick. You got to love a personal internet that thinks they know what they're talking about and have no idea. Like, there's nothing better sometimes than reading TikTok comments. It's like, you have no idea.
Because like, there's been times where, like, I've got a TikTok video, it hit 10 million views. And I wish I'd never done it. But I get so many messages like, oh my God, this is amazing, how much? And I'm like, I always say, it's just a filter, guys, it's just a filter. And so I remember someone going to me, no, it's not. I'm like, well, it is, because I edited it.
I filmed it and I put the filter on there.
Exactly, that's my hand. But yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So you've mentioned it a few times. So we shall move on to it now. Supergiants, but specifically Thor. So you currently keep the world's largest leopard gecko that is known, I presume?
Yeah, so I'll try and explain. It's a little bit of a story. So
yeah. So tell us all about Thor.
So Thor is actually a conjoint project with EcoGeckos. I don't know if any of you guys know EcoGeckos. He's probably got one of the biggest following reptile-wise on Instagram. He produces Black Knights. He's now the successor of Black Knight. So it's actually a conjoined project between me and Jay. It's actually owned by Jay, but when Jay got the project, it was always, this is our gecko.
Yeah.
He's going to all your females. So going to a little bit of a story time, I remember Jay's one of them people who we all know that if they say they're going to do something, they're going to do it. And I remember him coming up to me one day going, I'm going to get the world's biggest super giant and we're gonna take this to the next level. And I remember thinking, there's no way you're gonna get four. There's no way on earth you're gonna get four. About a year and a half later, four was originally owned by a guy called Stefan, and he's in Germany. His Facebook or his page is just called Super Giant Leopard Gecko. He's known for his super giants. And he approached Jay one day, or Jay approached him, and we'd come across some mutual agreement. He was like, I'm thinking of moving four. Anyway, Jay managed to get his little fingers in and get four. Yeah. I remember him telling me, I was like, there's no way, I'm not having it, Jay. You've not got four, because to us, it's a history piece. Me as a breeder, if I produce the world's biggest leopard gecko, that guy is not going anywhere. So I couldn't believe that this guy let him go. So me and Jay had conversations. He wants to do the Super Giant Black Knight, and what better male to get than the world's largest? And he basically, because not to blow my own trumpet or anything, I've sort of got a reputation in the UK for my giants. So when Jay approached me, he's like, look, I haven't got no giant females, I've got this super giant, expect all your females, and let's see if we can beat him. Because when you're posting super giants, I get people all the time, My 5-month female is bigger than that. And it's, I'm like, it ain't. I get it all the time. But our aim, we've seen 200 gram geckos and stuff, but they're so overweight. As with four, is with super giants, it's the sheer size. So people always go by weight. It isn't always necessary the weight. They're about shy of a foot long. And these geckos, they're, you know, if you get an adult, it's sort of like going to sort of here.
Yeah, they're like the length of your forearm, sort of.
Yeah, he's coming to like down here. But our aim is, because me personally, with my studies with super giants, is I don't know whether there's something going on in a way where the only geckos that I've ever had a sudden loss on have mainly been from my super giant stuff.
Right.
So I don't know whether it's thanks to it lion breeding, because of all the super giants that come from one super giant, which was moose, and they've all came from this one male. So everything they're all related in a way. So in my mind, I want to try and strengthen it. I want to try and see if we can beat him. But he is the world record. There's no Guinness World Record. I think you mentioned. I was like, you know what?
I did say that. Guinness, but I wasn't sure. I did put in there Guinness, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah, I was saying to Jay the other day, I said, we could maybe look into that, you know, but he is the record, the guy that makes the book, Ron Tremper, he's like the holy grail
of
leopard gecko. He kind of started it all with he brought out the Tremper albino. He's the guy, he made the giants. And in his book, he said, this right here is the world's largest leopard gecko. So I'm looking forward to seeing.
How big is Thor? How heavy is Thor? Or was it at the time of the picture and whatnot in the book?
So that picture, I think it was like, that book was released, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. So he's actually now, I think he's sitting at about the mid-190s, so 195, 196. If we really, really wanted to, we could, you know, keep feeding him waxworms, give him pinkies, and we could get him 200 and above. But the key is that, to get these leopard geckos large and keep them large, but not in an overweight and sick way.
You want them to be a healthy example. You don't want them to be some sort of giant blob wandering around.
Exactly. We got somebody on TikTok who's got a large leopard gecko that she bought from a pet shop, and for the last year she'll tag us and stuff where she's claiming now she's got the largest. But what she's trying to do, she's trying to outbeat four, but the gecko is so overweight. It's like, this is becoming really silly. Like, do you know what I mean?
Just to put it into perspective for people that don't know, what is the, like, an average weight of a large normal gecko as opposed to a giant or a super giant?
So it's quite difficult now, because as breeders, we're naturally holding back the best animals, the strongest animals. 6 years ago, leopard geckos, adult, let's say an adult male, because they're always bigger than females, they were probably getting to sort of 80, 90 grams. We're now seeing leopard geckos that are not giant now reaching the 120s, the 130s. I do think that's because we naturally hold back the best animals.
Hold back the biggest and the strongest.
Exactly. So, but for a super giant, me personally, females are a lot smaller. For a male, I wouldn't sell them as a super giant if they're any lower than, let's say, 110, 120, personally.
Okay.
But I would always say to people, when you get a super giant, please give it 2 to 3 years before you breed it. Because I've seen it so many times. It's not a problem. You can breed leopard geckos within a year, but with super giant, when you give them that growth, give them that couple of years, you will start seeing your gecko getting bigger and bigger. Because a lot of the time, people buy a super giant male off of me, that's 8-9 months. They've paired it to everything. They go off their food in the breeding season and stuff like that. And it stunts the growth. It really does. I mean, I gave Jay a hatchling 1 year, a little tiny little hatchling, which that's a super giant, Jay. Have fun with it, see how you do. That gecko ended up growing to being best part of 160 grams. And he is the UK's biggest produced super giant that I know. So Titan is the biggest super giant that's been produced in the UK. But that is, I'll give it to all credit to Jay. He gave it 2 or 3 years, and then he thought, right, he's good to go.
No, that's really cool. So is the super giant is it a genetic thing? So, like, you could have, for example, I don't know how it works. I don't know if it's like more. Could you have like a het super giant, or is it more of a case of it's a line breeding project, and if they hit over X amount of grams, then they're classed as a super giant?
So It's so controversial. It's like with black knights and stuff. Like, if it ain't black, it's not a black knight. It's the same with like Superjud, but it's quite controversial. So some people believe it's a dominant, some believe it's recessive, and some believe it's line bred. So me personally, I used to believe it was line bred. So big gecko to big gecko produces a big gecko. Yeah. That back to the bigger gecko. That's what I originally thought. But over the years of breeding, I've paired a super giant to a non-super giant and hatched out, let's say, a regular sized gecko.
Yeah.
And I paired that back to dad, who's a super giant, and produced super giants. So that makes you think, is that a het? Is it recessive? Because of I've paired a super giant to a non-super giant, making the baby's het super giant, and paired it back and producing. So it could be recessive, but I also believe it could be co-dominant. It's so hard this year.
It's one of those that needs some sort of scientist to work some scientific magic on the...
A lot of people believe it's incomplete dominant. In the Leopard Gecko book, they say it's recessive. In USA, they say it's recessive.
Yeah.
But this year, I'll be doing a lot more testing, a lot more studies. You'll be seeing a lot more information on my page about Supergiant because there's so much misinformation about it. I've got a time lapse. I'm trying to get a photo every like 2 or 3 days of a hatchling just to show you the pure growth and size and the time and loads of little things like that because of it is a very controversial topic. Some people don't even believe it. There's loads of people. I remember going to the Surrey show, which is now unfortunately gone. And I took the super giant as it's just a display. And the amount of people came over were looking, wow, oh my God, I've never seen a gecko so big. And there was a few people who were like, I didn't believe Supergiant until I've seen that. Because of the sheer size of them. They're almost double, if not triple, the size of a normal leopard gecko. And they get like a big diamond.
They're head. Almost like the size of a big Aki's monitor, like the Supergiant. they're not small at all. So when you're hatching your super giants, are you seeing are the eggs considerably bigger than a normal leopard gecko pairing? Are the hatchlings coming out a lot bigger than a normal standard size leopard gecko to leopard gecko pairing? Is it obvious from the moment they hatch that you can go, right, that one's a super giant and that one isn't? Or is it a case of waiting and seeing how they grow?
I'd say it's so inconsistent that I couldn't say. So for example, if I got 50 leopard gecko eggs and I put 10 super giant ones in and they all hatched at the same time, I wouldn't be able to go to you, that one's a super giant, that one's a super giant. It's so inconsistent. But generally, the eggs are definitely bigger. They're 100% definitely bigger. And I always find when you have a clutch, so geckos will lay 2 eggs, that'll be a clutch. I always find one of them is always a lot bigger than the other. And with super giants, with the babies, when you do hatch a big one, they are generally a lot bigger than the normal ones. But I'd say it's so inconsistent that I couldn't say for sure your super giants hatch out bigger and stuff like that. But they grow a lot quicker. I always find as hatchlings, for the first year, they will not stop eating. They just don't stop it. And once they hit sort of a year and a half, I'd actually say Thor eats less than some of my normal adult males, and he's like double, triple size of me. He actually eats less than them. So again, that's what makes me think must be genetic, because of if it was any other leopard gecko. So if I took 2 male leopard geckos, regular leopard geckos, and I fed one 2 Morio worms, and I fed one 5 Morio worms, that one's going to get smaller with the 2.
Yeah.
But with super giants, I don't know whether it's something to do with the metabolism on them. It's a lot slower. They're a lot more slower animal. I don't know whether that's something to do with it, but a lot of people they'll go, oh, you overfit. Honestly, 4 will probably have 2 or 3 Morios a week, if that. Whereas all the other ones, they can keep eating. It's very unusual. Very unusual.
I wonder if it's something just because he's so large, he's got much larger fat reserves, his tail and stuff. So he doesn't need to eat as much now. He's got to the size that he is.
Definitely.
Wow, that's really cool to be about. One of my leopard geckos. I don't think I've ever weighed him, but I'd like to give him a weigh him and see how much he does weigh. Because he was a rescue. I got him a few years ago. He's got no toes, bless him. And he was kept in a 30 by 30 Exoterra for his whole life with 1 cape. It was horrible. And he was only fed waxworm, so he was proper fat when I got him. But now he's in a nice bioactive. He gets fed a mixed diet. and he's finally losing those big fatty sacks under his armpits.
Yeah.
But he's a big boy. Like, he's like the length of my forearm, a good, like you say, 11, 12 inches. But I have no idea how much he weighs. So I might try. He doesn't come out very often. He doesn't like being handled. He just bites you. but if I can get him to come out to entice him out, I might get weigh him and just out of curiosity. I reckon he's got to be well over 100.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of super giants that have probably leaked into your pet shops and stuff like, because he's such an old morph.
Yeah.
Maybe like Ghost. Ghost is a gene it was really big back in the early 2000s, and it just naturally got lost. There's only a few breeders that are working with it that are known Ghost. And you look at some people's ones, oh, I've got this pet, it's 8 years old, and I'm like, that looks Ghost.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff. So like what I'm saying is there's some people that look at geckos and think, bloody, that's a big gecko you got from a pet shop. I won't be surprised if like some lower end wholesale giants got sent to shops, and people maybe like yourself or other people have picked them up, and they have generally got a giant there.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to weigh him later. I'm going to try and find out. It's got me thinking. But like you say, it is really interesting. And like we said with the Ghost, I suppose morphs, probably much like royals, they will go in and out of fashion.
Yeah.
So, and some of them just get lost. And like you say, they pop up in pet shops and all sorts.
Definitely.
Carry on.
I said you get little like phases and fads, with what we do, especially with morphs and color patterns and stuff like. I remember, I'm talking a few years ago now, when clown was it was huge. And I remember seeing the price of clown, thinking, whoa, now I feel like almost every ball pup I see now has clown.
Everyone's got clown. Apart from me, I don't really like clown. And I don't like to say it very often because people don't like it when I say that. But yeah, clown is like, it's like they're more popular than anything else, I think. And everyone's got clown or is working with clown in some way or another. And, yeah, it's a bit overrated in my opinion, but I keep that to myself. I don't ever say it on the internet for people to listen to. but each their own. But yeah, I think, like you say, definitely fads, and some things will be really popular for a few years and then they'll disappear completely. And then they'll crop back up in a few years' time as if it's something brand spanking new. And some people will be going, oh, I've had that in my collection for 10, 15 years. And that's cool. So talking of things cropping up, what sort of projects are you working on at the moment? For those that know stuff about leopard gecko morphs, because you're going to say loads of things that I have no idea.
Yeah. About. So I like to work with stuff that not a lot of people have, and how I am as a breeder, I'm quite tough on myself, where because we've got so many lines, like we've got tangerine leopard geckos, we've got like, I don't know, like 10 different lines of tangerines, and we got loads of different, like, people have this pastel. There's so much stuff going on. Similar to royals, it's hard to say. I don't really know how to try to explain it. I'd say, I don't know. Imagine someone saying to you, what's your favourite? I'm working with Stonewash at the moment, and I believe I am 1 in 6 people that work with Stonewash.
Right, okay. So in the world or in the UK, is that?
That's in the world. I think I'm...
Right, okay.
I'd personally... There's a few people that have got some Stonewash stuff that they've had from me and stuff like that in the UK, but I'd say I am the predominant... I've got the two Stonewashes. Most of them I've let go across it, so I've got the crown jewel. So I've got the Stonewash stuff, I have various tangerine stuff, I've got some... Mandarin tangerines that are going to be doing really well. Big super giant season for me this year. My first season working with some Black Knight stuff. Black Knights are like the clown a few years ago. Black Knights are like
I've seen Black Knights. I remember I saw them on Morph Market a few years ago with like a $5,000 price tag, and they're like jet black or almost jet black, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like a bit of a fad at the moment, but
yeah.
Like we were saying earlier, what's got tricky with the Black Knights is someone will buy like a decent Black Knight, cross it to everything, and everything will be labelled Black Knight. So it's kind of like I don't want to say it's going like in downhill because of the people that are doing really well with it. It shows they're doing really well with it.
But
there's so much mislabeling at the moment with the Black Knight. But I've got Black Knight stuff, some green tangerines, some radars. Trempers. So much going on.
There's a lot going on. So a busy year for you then.
Yes, very busy.
Have you got hatchlings this year already?
Sorry?
Have you had hatchlings this year already?
Yeah. I think I've hatched about 60 to 70 babies at the moment.
Okay, and how many are you hoping to produce for the year?
Yeah, so I've got 60, 70 babies. So I've got 130, 140 this season. I probably still have a few eggs that are going to come out. I'd say 130-ish, I'd say, this season.
That's a lot of little tiny mouths to feed.
It's a lot of tiny mouths to feed.
Are you buying in your like bugs, or are you breeding them at home?
I've tried the whole mealworm farms, I think, because I've got so much now that it's with the time and effort is shifting through mealworms and stuff like that. It's so much cheaper just to buy them in bulk. I have tried it. I've tried the Morio worms. I've tried the mealworms. I have produced them, but I don't produce enough. And they're actually a lot of work.
Yeah, they really are. I found the same. I'm trying to produce some, and they're just like, I find I'm spending more time looking after the mealworms than the geckos.
Yeah, no, seriously. With mealworms, they're like one of the most dirtiest insects. And a lot of people actually got allergies with their frass.
Yeah.
So you have to sit there sifting through that, and I take them outside. You've got to blow the container so all the skin goes. It's just too much.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And so, when you're doing your hatchlings, are you buying like mini mealworms, or do they eat like a half a mealworm? What sort of size are you feeding them? Like, let's say from the from coming out of the egg to the first 12 weeks, I suppose. What sort of size prey items are they eating?
This is probably going to come as a little bit of a shock to people, but I actually feed the babies the same size mealworms as I feed my adults.
Okay.
I've seen people use minis and stuff like that, which is absolutely fine. But I've always used the standard stuff. I'm not talking like huge mealworms, but they're just called standard mealworm.
Yeah.
And I feed mine all that, never had any problems. I have tried the mini mealworms. There's also something called a buffalo worm. It's like another species. They seem to not really like them as much, but I generally feed, apart from crickets, if I was going to get crickets or something, I've got a large cricket, I wouldn't feed that to a baby. I'd get the small crickets. But I think because the mealworms, even though they're long, they're quite thin, they say nothing thicker than the space between their eyes.
Yeah.
Mealworm is easy.
Yeah.
I feed mine exact same as my adults. And same with the troop giants. They get fed the exact same. When they sort of go to sub-adult sort of size, they will be fed more. But also, I love Morio worms. They're brilliant. If you can get some baby Morio worms, or if you produce your Morio worms at home, Morio worms are a bit easier than your mealworms, even though they're like the same, but they're just a bit easier to deal with. If you can get babies from them and feed them to your geckos, you're going to see such a bigger growth. They have more protein.
A lot more nutritious than mealworms.
Yeah, we've got a bit more meat to them.
Yeah.
I love Morio worms. Morio worms and dubias are great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I had dubias and then they escaped. So I'm not allowed cockroaches at home anymore because my wife was very, very unhappy. She called me at work and was like, I found this on the floor in the kitchen. What is it? I was like, Oh no, I'm in trouble. But we spent like ages like deep cleaning the whole house, pulled everything out, I'm pretty sure I haven't seen one touch wood for a long time now, but it was she was not happy.
Yeah, they seem to, even though you get the escape proof tubs and that, they always get out. I've had them in the bed. Yeah. I've had them all over the place.
I tell you what, we get in the bed very occasionally. I don't know how they get there, is I don't know what they're called. You know the beetles that the mealworms turn into?
Oh, yeah, the darling.
The little black meat. So occasionally, like, I've got the rule is there's no reptiles in the bedroom. And it doesn't happen very often, probably once every, 8-9 months. One will just crop up on the bed. I'm like, where the hell have you come from? I have no idea where it comes from. Like, the leopard geckos are all in different rooms. Like, I've got three dogs in the house as well, and anything that's on the floor, normally they eat it. So, but they obviously come from somewhere. And I wonder if it's like where I'm cleaning them out and one's crawled on my sleeve and I've not noticed it or something. But that never goes down very well either.
They always seem to go for the bed.
Yeah, I know. And it's never my side that they're on either. It's always Vicky's side. So, it's not great. Right, so we've been going for an hour and 15 minutes, so we're going to slowly start to wrap up. What I want to touch on now is your podcast, because like, as I said at the beginning, you are a podcaster, and you've mentioned it a couple of times as well. So tell us a bit about your podcast, please.
So it sort of happened completely out of the blue, really. It was around about 2020, first lockdown. Everyone was at home. No one was allowed to go out. And I got invited onto a live, they called it Lives on YouTube, for a breed in the USA called Lunar Geckos. And I remember doing the interview with him, and I remember coming off of that interview thinking, I really enjoyed that. Like, imagine I was the guy bringing other people on, interviewing them, and then sharing it out to people. So I sort of got the itch from that. I remember speaking to Jim. I was like, look, I don't want to, like, you know, you got me on your show. Like, I don't want to just start jumping up and down. I'm doing a show now. Is that all right if I do it, kind of thing? It's like, honestly, mate, I'm honoured that I made you feel like that. So
yeah.
I went out. It was actually Instagram Lives. I was doing it all through Instagram Lives, because in my thought process is I would want as many people to see it as possible.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's what we all want. I know, like, numbers don't matter and stuff like that. It's, the more people we get to see our shows and stuff,
it's more encouraging as well.
Exactly. So I had the mindset where if I went on the live on Instagram and done an interview with somebody, not only will my following get to see it, their following will get to see it. So when you do, like, Instagram Lives, it says so-and-so's going live with.
Yeah.
So that really built up my show. So it was all through Instagram. Then I moved it more into like a podcast, but I'll be honest with you, man, it's I had a daughter September last year. She's 10 months now. Running a podcast, running all your animals and doing everything else is so difficult.
It takes a lot of time.
You will know more than anybody. Yeah. I think it does. A lot of people think it's easier than what it is, but it's so hard to do, and it's nervous. Like,
it's surprising how nervous. Like, this is like episode 13. Like, I still get nervous. Like, even just messaging someone, like, "Hi, would you be interested in coming on?"
Yeah,
it's surprising. I'm like, "Oh my god, are they going to say no? Are they even going to reply?" And like you say, there's a lot of work. Like, although I'm only doing one episode every fortnight, I'm trying to post on Instagram every day just to promote the podcast. I'm trying to line up guests. I'm trying to get like artwork and stuff done. It's surprising how much, like, when I started, I didn't think it was going to take up as much time as it does. But don't get me wrong, I really enjoy doing it. And so I deal with it, but I haven't got a 10-month-old, so, you know.
It's something I'm always going to, even though I took a small break, I'm always going to do that. I really enjoy doing that. But yeah, like we were just saying, it's a very nervous, because with me, I think how I deal with my nerves is I come across quite bubbly, but I think that's how I am because I'm nervous.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't realise when we do our shows and that, not only is the person nervous, we're nervous too.
Yeah.
And it's hard because of you worry sometimes because you might get someone onto the show and they're not the most talkative person. So you have to fight, you have to bring it out of them. So, and a lot of the times with my podcast, sometimes I think the last person I did last show explained it perfectly. He said, "I'll be talking to someone, giving someone a question." I think it's that Vivid Reptiles.
Yeah, Gary from Vivid Skin Reptiles.
He explained it brilliantly. He was like, "We get someone on a show, we'll be talking to them, but while they're answering me a question and I've got to find a response for it, I'm already thinking about the next question to ask."
Yeah.
There's so much going on sometimes, but yeah, I wish we had these sort of platforms when we were starting. Like, I was listening to yours. I never knew your podcast. I started listening to yours, and what I liked about yours is there's so many people with like ADHD, autism and stuff. Sometimes podcasts come across very too much information that you can't take it in.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So it's like, we're listening to yours, you can sort of relate, you can understand it more, and that's what sort of similar what I was trying to do. I wanted to do my show like, you're coming on to have a chat with someone who enjoys reptiles. We'll have a few jokes. I just want to have a good time. So that's what my podcast is, basically.
No, that's exactly it. That's exactly what I'm trying to do here. Like, I don't want it to be like the most in-depth, like talking scientific names, and like, because I want the platform not only for me, like, I like having a huge variety of guests on because I can learn something new every episode, which I really enjoy doing. And it's nice to talk to people just about animals in general. I like to think of it more like a chat down the pub with your mates than like a scientific lecture. And for people that are just getting into the hobby, I find something like this where we're having a good chat, but everything is really easy to understand and not like super in depth, is going to help encourage people in. Whereas if we were sat here talking like the in-depth genetics of whatever, then people that necessarily don't either have the experience or just aren't that interested will tend to glaze over and go, oh, this isn't for me. Whereas if you keep it lighthearted, moving the topics around, and you touch on lots of bits, but it's not too in-depth for everything, it keeps people entertained, and like they might learn something, which is, I suppose, it's the end goal, is passing on the knowledge to somebody else. So like you said, you have had a gap in your podcast, but you will be back at some point. So if people want to go and listen to old episodes or hang about for new stuff that will come eventually, whenever you're ready, where can they find it? Is it on Instagram only, or are you on anywhere else? Where can we find it?
So every episode is on YouTube. If you search Morphtastic Live, it'll pop up. It's also on Spotify and podcasts. There's about just under 30 episodes, but there's going to be a slight change how I'm going to do things. It's going to be going less of a like a podcast, where because of how I am at the moment, I can't set times. For example, someone said every Thursday we're going to do an episode. I can't do that at the moment with how
people
are and stuff. So I wanted to get it more into like a YouTube video interview. So it'll be like, we had a private recording, I edit it and stuff like that, and it'll go onto YouTube. Instead of it going on, because it's expensive, running podcasts are expensive with the hosting and stuff, it costs a few quid. So it'll be going more that way. But yeah, Morphtastic Live, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Spotify podcast, you can find us, and we've got loads of episodes on there. We've also got a few rules on there.
Awesome. And there will be links to that in the show notes as well when I put them in, once I remember to do that. So if you go back and see it in a couple of days and I haven't done it, someone give me a kick up the arse. But I'll try and do it straight away. Cool. So that was pretty much all I had in my notes section. Anyway, I do want to just finish up, wrapping up, with what I like to call the Hall of Fame and the Hall of Shame. So if you've listened before, you will know that this is how I like to finish a podcast. Basically, it's for newbies, or just everyone, I suppose, but more aimed at new keepers. I like to sort of imagine the Hall of Shame and the Hall of Fame as a sort of like a museum where you walk through, and there's lots of pedestals, lots of stuff on it. So you walk through the Hall of Shame, and this is like a museum where previous guests have gone through and said something that they particularly don't like about their reptile hobby, be it a product, some advice, something like that. And they're putting it in there so people go, oh, right, I'm new to this, I'll make sure I stay away from that. Mm-hmm. After they've done the Hall of Shame, they walk through the Hall of Fame, and this is exactly the same concept, but it's all the really good stuff. So we're going to take a walk into the Hall of Shame and the Hall of Fame now. And if you could please tell me what you would like to add to the Hall of Shame.
Hall of Shame for leopard gecko keeping, red lights.
Yep.
Calcium sand. It's hard.
So to be fair, that's more. You only needed to give me one, so two.
Oh, okay.
So red bulbs and calcium sand. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to take calcium sand because we had red bulbs already. So calcium sand is another one. I'll add it to the Hall of Shame. So all those keepers that come through and read the care sheets, it's like, yeah, calcium sand. And they'll go, hang on a minute, it says on that podcast, calcium sand's rubbish, so we won't use that. And now they're going to walk into the Hall of Fame. And in the Hall of Fame, what would you like to add? For it can be leopard gecko specific, or it can be reptile specific, but something that you use or you've heard or a piece of advice, and you'd like to pass that on to keepers in the future.
So the next one, I'd say invest in what you're going to get into. So if you want to get into some tangerines, you haven't necessarily got to go out and spend the most you could ever spend. You can go, let's say you've got a budget of £100, try and get the best possible animal you can for that money. And that will treat you in the long run if you want to be a breeder.
I know exactly what you mean. Like I said right at the beginning of the podcast, like my pastel calico girl, I was probably looking for 18 months before I found the right example. I like that. Maybe, how can we sum it up? don't rush into buying something you really you want to get into. Spend the time, do the research, and find the best that you can for the money that you've got.
Absolutely.
I really like that. That's fantastic. So last thing before I say goodbye to you today, it's time to for you to plug yourself. So where can people find you?
You can find me on all the social medias, so Facebook, Instagram, the new Threads. I'd recommend everyone jump on that
one. Are you on Threads? My mum was telling me to go on Threads. I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't even like Twitter.
Oh, your mum. Oh, my you want that new Threads?
My mum loves the social media.
Oh, bless her. But yeah, no, I'm on Threads, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. You can find me in all those places. There's also, I'm plugging it a little bit, there's a new reptile social media similar to the Morph Market one. It's called Reptipost. I'm on there as well. And Cold-Blooded, but you'll find me on there. Elite Gecko.
Fantastic.
It's only one of
you. Yeah, there's only one of you. If so, just search Elite Geckos pretty much anywhere.
Yeah,
and, you'll find George. So that's pretty much us for today, mate. So thank you very much for coming on. I've really, really enjoyed this chat. And I'm sure we will catch up again very, very soon. So until next time, I'll just say goodbye to you. So thank you very much. See you later.
Ben, see you later, mate.
Cool. So that was a really good episode, actually. I really, really enjoyed that. George was fantastic. If you're still listening, thank you very much. I'd just like to add that I really appreciate all the support that I've been getting for the podcast recently. I've just hit over, I can't remember. I'm super close to 1,000 downloads through Buzzsprout. So that like covers Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the audio platforms. So if I hit 1,000 downloads, that'd be awesome. I'm also not far off 400 subscribers on YouTube too. So if you are listening and you haven't subscribed, if you're watching on YouTube, or if you haven't followed, if you're listening on an audio platform, please hit that subscribe button or the follow button. Give me a rating, a like, a thumbs up, whatever. It's all free. It's all a free feature, and it massively helps my podcast, and it helps YouTube promote it, or it helps Spotify promote it, or whatever. You can also drop a comment below if you haven't already. Again, that really, really helps the podcast grow. And it's just nice to hear from you guys. I like to know that what I'm putting out is entertaining. If you want to support the podcast a little bit more than a like or a comment or a follow or whatever, there is a link in the show notes below to a website called Buy Me a Coffee, where you can donate the cost of a coffee towards the podcast. Because as George said, running a podcast isn't the cheapest thing in the world, so every donation is massively appreciated. But obviously a like and a comment or whatever is as appreciated as a donation. Anyway, I'm rambling on now, so that's enough of that. Last thing, if you want to keep up to date on what's going on with me, my royal breeding, or what's going on with the podcast, you can go and follow me on the two Instagram pages. So at Ben's Balls is for my royal keeping, and I occasionally post pictures of the other reptiles we've got at home as well. Or at RepTiChat for everything that's going on with the podcast. That includes stories, I release who's coming on the podcast, which guests are coming on. We also do Q&As and stuff like that on the stories. So that's always a good one to go and follow. So yeah, that is all from me today. Last thing for me to do is say goodbye, and I will see you in 2 weeks. Thank you very much. Goodbye.